My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy. It's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Now we're going back to the Edwardian era now because Julia Leight has written about the disappearance of Lydia Harvey. But who was she? Well, Julia can explain because she joins us now. Welcome to the show, Julia.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So indeed, who was she?
So Lydia Harvey was a nobody, really. She was a young, poor woman from a small town in New Zealand who was working as a domestic servant in Wellington when she met a man who promised her a better life. And she took a gamble on that, boarded a steamship, and found herself in Buenos Aires, where she was trafficked into the sex industry.
Wow. Well, and that was back in 1910?
Yeah, this happened in 1910.
And apparently it happened a lot and many girls just disappeared off the face of the earth and were forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes as a surprise to some people who think of trafficking as a really kind of contemporary phenomenon to learn that the early 20th century world was obsessed with this idea of young women like Lydia Harvey who kind of disappeared from their workplaces and from their homes. And it was rumored ended up in the sex industry. And it's really hard to say, you know, to find the space between the panic about this and the reality of these young women's lives, because a lot of them were actually making decisions to try to build a better life for themselves, but very often found themselves in very exploitative situations.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, apparently there were six characters involved in the case, obviously Harvey herself. If we can go through the others, the second being the Soho police detective, what was his sort of part in the story?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So when I sat down to tell this story, I wanted to just give it a real human complexity, to really think about all of the people in the case as individual human beings, and rather than as sort of idealized victims or caricatured monstrous perpetrators. And one of the characters in the story is Ernest Anderson, who's the detective inspector at Scotland Yard. And he's the one who finds Lydia Harvey on the streets of London, because after Buenos Aires, she was then trafficked on to London. And he decides that this is a case worth pursuing and assembles a small team, and they launch this undercover investigation. In the end, they manage to get it to trial.
Yeah, very brave of her to stand trial, because I shouldn't think it would be very safe back then.
No, and she was threatened. She was threatened by her trafficker that if he'd ever saw her again, that he would do for her, which probably meant harm or kill her. And it's actually difficult to say how much of a say she had in terms of whether or not she was going to testify, because it could well have been that she was coerced into testifying. And she was held up as this kind of star witness in the case. But then when she sort of asked for money to go back home, the government refused to pay. So I think it's really important to think about the kind of space between what people wanted to do to help trafficking victims and the kind of lack of support they actually encountered when they went through the court system.
Yeah. So Ernest Anderson, we mentioned he was a Soho police detective. So she was brought back to London then.
Yes, so she was the trafficker kind of gets arrested and bailed in Argentina, books another passage to London and takes her to London, where they find an apartment to live in North Soho, which is today's Fitzrovia. Then she's forced to solicit on the streets of London as well.
So we've got Harvey herself, we've got Ernest Anderton, the police detective. Who was the young journalist who broke the story?
That was Guy Scholefield, who at the time was the New Zealand Associated Press correspondent in London. And I didn't actually know who was writing the news stories about Lydia Harvey at first, because back in 1910, journalists didn't have bylines. So it was just our special London correspondent. But when I figured out who he was, it was really interesting, because he's actually a very prominent historian, or was a very prominent historian himself in New Zealand. So he started as a journalist and then as a war correspondent, and eventually became one of the official government historians of New Zealand.
Right. And did he work with the police detective and with her, that they were all on her side, presumably?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because it's kind of difficult to say whose side anyone was on in this story. The journalist wanted to tell the story, but this was in an era when these sensational cases were really making headlines and selling papers. And so there really could have been an ulterior motive behind him wanting to tell this story, other than just, for example, trying to get her justice. Because it was also a sensational trial that was going to sell the newspapers. And the police kind of knew this about journalists, so they very rarely worked together themselves. Journalists were often resented by the police and vice versa. So it was a real tangle that I really try to bring out in the book.
Yeah. And somebody that I really do hope did look after her was the female social worker who took care of her after her arrest.
That's exactly right. She was named Eileen McDougall, and she was an early social worker. So this was before social work became a profession, and it was largely staffed by people who were volunteering or who were working for very low wages in a charity sector, largely run by the church. And Eileen McDougall was, and I kind of want to make it my mission to tell more people about Eileen McDougall, because she was one of the very first women to ever work with the Metropolitan Police in London, or any police force in Great Britain and in Europe. And she put herself at the forefront of what we'd now call victim services or victim support, at a time when nobody cared about the victims beyond their utility as witnesses. And she provided a safe house for Lydia Harvey and for hundreds and hundreds of other women after her, who had nowhere else to go because they were victims of sexual abuse and exploitation. And it's a real shame she's not better known in the history books, because she really was an incredible woman.
Well, that's down to you now to write a book about her.
Exactly.
And why Lydia Harvey? Because I've certainly never heard of her. How did you find out about her?
Yeah, nobody would have ever heard of her, really, if I hadn't written about her. I found her in an archive file. So her case was one of hundreds that I've looked at over the course of my research of young women who were caught in exploitative domestic service jobs and who tried to make better lives for themselves, who looked at selling sex as a potential option for that, and who ended up getting in a lot of trouble and being harmed. And so I at first just thought, she's just another one of these young women. I'm never going to know anything about her other than, you know, what's written down in this police report. And then I got to thinking, I wonder if I could know more about her. I wonder if I looked and used family history research techniques, so genealogy, those sorts of things, and hunted through the newspapers and just tried to reconstruct her life. I wonder, you know, how that would change the story. And so I started doing that, and I started finding these little breadcrumbs, these little traces of her beyond the archive file that I had originally found. And then I just kept looking and looking, and I looked for a very long time until I was able to really tell her life story and make her more than just a victim or an anecdote, but a kind of real, complex, living, breathing human being. And that was my first aim in this book, is to restore to her that kind of humanity.
Well, it sounds like you have, and it must be great fun. It must be very exciting doing all this research.
Yeah, that I'm glad you asked me about that, because it is so much fun, and it's really like being a detective in a way. Yeah. You know, hunting through the archives, finding the tiniest little scraps of information and piecing it together to tell a story is incredibly exciting. And there's some moments when I just couldn't believe what I'd found, you know, by sheer serendipity, what I managed to find in the archive, and the stories that spun out of it, and just the incredible detail in people's lives, including the life of the trafficker himself, which I also reconstructed. And that was a difficult task, but it was also just absolutely incredible to see how he moved around the world, all of the things that he did, all of the trouble he got himself in.
Yeah, they're the last two characters, aren't they? Antonio Carvelli and his wife, Veronique.
Yes, that's right. And in a lot of ways, they were the hardest chapters to write, because they are the villains in the story. They do harm Lydia Harvey. It's very clear they're exploiting her in order to make money. But I really wanted to stick with this ethos of understanding people as human beings rather than as caricatures or as monsters, because I don't think that gets us very far in understanding, you know, why people do these things, what trafficking is, what exploitation is. And so I really wanted to humanize them for all their sins. And Antonio Carvelli is just an incredibly interesting man. He was a musician, an opera singer, a businessman. He had about 16 or 17 different pseudonyms over the course of his life, constantly changing who he was and how he presented himself, you know, both as a criminal and as an upstanding member of the community. And, you know, he's moving all around the world on these steamships over and over again. Just, you kind of, I had trouble finding him sometimes because he moves around so much.
Wow.
And his wife, Veronique, it's a similar story. She was a middle-class young woman born in Melbourne, Australia. And for reasons that I think will always remain hidden, and that's perhaps exactly how she wanted it to be, she chose to sell sex when she was in her early 20s, and she made an immense amount of money working in what was called Australia's Wild West, the gold fields out west. And then again, led this incredibly exciting life, traveling around the world, having adventures, changing her name, changing her personality. And so talking about Veronique was really hard, because I had to reconcile this incredibly interesting woman who obviously had, you know, secrets and stories of her own with the person who also engaged in exploiting Lydia Harvey. And so it was really difficult to write, but I think, you know, I really wanted it to be complicated and difficult.
Yeah, I suppose you don't know what happened to her in her childhood, do you?
Well, that's one of the things I think about in the
right,
book, exactly. Yeah. You know, all the stories that are hidden, all the things that shape us as people that don't leave a mark on the historical record.
Yeah. So what happened after the trial then, Julia?
Yeah, I'll say a little, but I don't want to give a spoiler.
Absolutely,
it's very funny to talk about spoilers in history books, because technically we should all already know what happened. but the book is very novelistic, and it does hold some of its secrets until the end. But after the trial, there is a big controversy about who's going to pay to get Lydia Harvey home, which is really incredible when you think about it, because this is an era that's professing to be so concerned with victims of trafficking. And yet here they have a, you know, real living, breathing victim of trafficking, and nobody wants to help her after she served her purpose. So it's actually Ernest Anderson who manages to raise the money from police donations in order to get her home. And she's sent back to New Zealand, and she's immediately sent right back into domestic service, which is the very job that she hated so much. That, you know, she was willing to do anything to escape from. And so I often think about, you know, what she thought after having gone through all of this hardship and taken all of these risks to find herself back in a in a job that demanded she work up to 75 or 80 hours a week for next to no pay. And so it's, you know, in a way it's not the ending that you might want. But it really underlines the reality of poor young women's lives in this era.
Yeah. I'm sure over 111 years ago now, isn't it?
111 years ago. Yeah.
Crazy. Well, we are selling the book on our website as always. It's called The Disappearance of Lydia Harvey. It's a Guardian Book of the Week. Congratulations on that.
And
thank you. By Julia Late, who we're chatting to now. Julia, we look forward to when you've got Ali McDougall's book out and we can chat again.
I can talk about Ali McDougall all day. It's been great to talk to you, Selena.
You too. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.